Welcome to Day Zero Update for April 9th, 2023. I'm your host, Chris Logi.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Daniel Victoria.
And yeah, we've got a busy week this week. We unfortunately were not able to get a show together last week.
Yeah.
Just schedules did not align super well.
Also, I was basically completely exhausted, so.
Yeah, so we took a little break. Luckily, we didn't have that much on the outline at that point, but we brought some of that stuff back for this week because there's some interesting stuff there.
Mm-hmm.
But we also have a bunch of new stuff for this week.
Mm-hmm.
We got a bunch of stuff coming out here throughout the month. We've got a bunch of your subscription services have new games.
Mm-hmm.
And we got, let's see here, some updates. And let's say E3 has a dubious future. We don't know.
Yeah.
What's going on there? That seems like it was a whole shit show.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah, we'll cap it off talking about The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom, because we now know at least some of what that game does.
Mm-hmm. And I'm going to be honest, I saw it, and I want that game now.
Yeah.
Like, I want it in my Nintendo Switch right now. I want to be playing it right now.
Yeah, it's only a month away, so
mm-hmm.
we're not too far. But yeah, but before we get to all of that stuff, we'll be talking about what we've been playing, and I'll kick it off here. I've been playing a couple of new games here. Meet Your Maker came out.
Mm-hmm.
It is part of the PlayStation Plus Essential lineup for the month, and it's on Xbox and PC as well. It is the new game from Behavior, the makers of Dead by Daylight.
Mm-hmm.
They have kind of gone in a bit of a different direction. It's not, you know, like a co-op, you know, one of those 4v1 sort of games based around horror tropes and all that. This time around, it's kind of a post-apocalyptic, I would say just kind of a dungeon creation game, essentially. Yeah. It's a bit tough to explain, but they throw a lot of story at you early on
mm-hmm.
in that this is some post-apocalyptic future where some virus is like destroying humanity for a lot of people, like destroys their cells,
mm-hmm.
their DNA, causes mutations in some, if they're lucky. And you are somebody that this character called the Chimera, who potentially could create a cure for this virus, but you have to collect genetic material for them, and you do that by raiding these outposts that people have created, which are filled with traps and guards and potentially, you know, just weird design to trick you up in a way that makes for a very interesting game, because I think a lot of people maybe saw this and thought it was like a Doom clone, just a straight up Doom clone, and it's not anywhere close to that. You do start with a gun, but it has two shots, and you have to pick them up when you're, you know, after you shoot them.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, that can be a little tougher or easier depending on how you use them up. And yeah, that is makes for an interesting game. So you're kind of, I did a few runs in Outpost. Died a few times. You don't really lose anything by dying. You just, you know, restart at the start of the stage and you'll have to redo things. But obviously, you've probably learned where at least some traps are and enemies and all that. And each one I played got more and more tricky and clever in a way that was really cool to see. One used a lot of cool sort of diagonal blocks to create a lot of weird architecture, like that made it look a lot more tricky than it actually was.
Mm-hmm.
The way that you know how to get through it is that there's a weird little robot dude that is walking back and forth between the genetic marker or genetic material canister that's somewhere inside this outpost, backed out to the place where you spawn in,
mm-hmm.
essentially. And so if you're, you know, smart and don't kill him, he'll let you, he'll walk, you know, through the main path to show you where to go. So You can also hear him go around, but obviously some of these traps can be tricky for that. He doesn't set them off. It doesn't set them off, but you know, you can set off traps that could end up killing it, and then you'd be like, oh shit, how do I get out of here? And there's the notion of a back half of traps. Essentially, once you grab the genetic material, you need to escape, and you can have traps set up to only engage when you've picked up the genetic material, which the last outpost I did when I streamed this was one of those, in that they had these blocks all around it that were, they're essentially like laser traps. You walk into them, you'll die. But they're also a bit hazy inside, and use that to hide where potential traps would come in. So you sort of get this genetic material. It's kind of that kind of this path kind of wraps around sort of like a, say like a P, the letter P, how it wraps around, you know, back up to the line, the like where that line met was a wall with the genetic material on the one side. And these lasers were set up to engage all these traps to try to screw you over, which took me a few times to get. But basically, like, I had to, as soon as I got that material, just like jump out of where all of these traps were going to be at to this other area, which then I would get engaged with this grabber trap that like throws out a big thing at you to grab you and pull you. And it tried to do that and have, you know, this one trap that just shoots out a bunch of like spears at you. Luckily I got out of it before that could engage, that kind of thing. But also does a neat thing with the UI. Whenever you engage a trap, you see like a big mass of like red blocks on your screen in the direction where it's coming from. So if you're not exactly sure where things might go, you can definitely take that on and be like, oh, something's coming from this way, I'm going to step out of the way, kind of thing. And so it's basically a game all about game design, where you're building out these traps and paths and all this to try to confuse people and do all that. You'll probably have to do at least a handful of outposts before you can build your own. Because that requires a certain currency that you do not get right away. So that takes a little bit to do, but you're basically grabbing a plot of land or something like that. Well, I forget what it's specifically called, but it seems to be like randomly generated frameworks of an outpost. Then you have to, you can just set up your traps to be, you know, pretty straightforward as far as the pathing and all that. It'll run you through tutorials to show you all this. But yeah, I've got an intricate path set out on the one I have, but that thing refreshes like every 12 or 24 hours. So I think it throws up a bunch of stuff. Doesn't let you pick names on them. I think they're all auto-generated. But when you go to start up a new outpost to take on, they're like, there's like a normal difficulty and a harder difficulty. I assume you get bigger rewards for the harder ones, but those are ones that are probably killing a lot more people. And the reason why you want to build sort of an intricate outpost is that it will generate genetic material for you to pick up every so often from people dying in it. So you probably want to make something that can be reasonably done, or you can make it as tough and, you know, much of an asshole kind of outpost as you want to really trick people. But I think people really want to have good ones. It's the same thing as like a Super Mario Maker, where you know, you can make really jerk levels that wind through a lot of stuff, having, you know, doors that take you all throughout it to make it a really hard thing that could take you like, you know, a couple hours to get through. The cooler ones are ones that are reasonably doable, but do a lot of interesting things to trick you up and keep you on your toes, but you'll eventually get through it. But yeah, the outpost stuff is pretty well done. I think they have specific packs of, blocks and such that you can use that are all, I guess like 5 of the packs you can use for one outpost. So you can't necessarily use just like one of everything. They have like a Dead by Daylight, so I assume they're going to be adding more over time for that stuff. But yeah, you can have like specific flavors. There's lots of sticker stuff you can put on your blocks to create, you know, like guides for where to go or maybe to trick people, all this kind of stuff. There's a lot of cool stuff to do. It seems like a game that people should definitely check out. Maybe the only real knock I have on the game is that the art style is not all that great. It's got kind of a very kind of gross, doomish kind of style to it. I mean, like 2016 or Eternal kind of style to it, but a little bit worse than that, where it's just kind of looks like you're on a Mars kind of ish area, a desert all around you with this outpost. But the way that you can design everything inside looks pretty neat when it's done well. Otherwise, the one I'm working on, I've got a path set up. I just have to build out the interior and how to set up traps and all that stuff to try to trick people things. But it's a pretty cool game. Definitely worth checking out, especially if you have PlayStation Plus. It's available for the month. Definitely worth grabbing and checking out if you're into those kind of creation games, especially one that's pretty reasonably accessible. So there you go. Meet Your Maker. That's a pretty cool one. The other game I played that came out this week is PGA Tour or EA Sports PGA Tour. They haven't really given any sort of fancy name to it. I think on the PS5 dashboard it just says PGA Tour, but a lot of places are calling it EA Sports PGA Tour, but it's the long-awaited return to golf games for EA. It is pretty similar to a lot of the Tiger Woods games, where you know you're using the left stick to do your swing, pulling it back, then forward, and trying to do that reasonably straight so that you get a good straight shot. They put like markers on the swing meter that's or the swing arc, I guess, that tell you like where the sweet spot is for how far to pull your club back, that kind of thing. It also has the thing where as soon as you hit it into the air, you kind of want to mash the button and a stick direction to get the ball sort of some aftertouch for the ball to get it rolling in the direction you want. But yeah, it's pretty limited early on so far. I'm just playing the trial for the EA Play trial, which gives you 10 hours, which is pretty generous. All the golf stuff, in-game stuff, is pretty good. It all works pretty well how you would expect it and all that. The issues I had with this game is a lot of bugs outside of that, where I streamed it and was like making my character and couldn't get the keyboard to pop up so I could change the name and the like hometown and that kind of stuff. So I had to, for this whole stream, play as Created Golfer. When I came back for a second session with it, I was able to do that. So it was kind of a weird bug there that kind of made it look pretty bad in that spot. There are also some menu bugs where I would get into menus where I'm trying to adjust things and would get trapped where none of the buttons would work, or the regular back buttons wouldn't work and that kind of thing. But I had to use the shoulder buttons to get out of there because those manage a lot of the other menus in there. And then at the end of my stream, the shoulder button menus all just disappeared. That was just a very weird bug to see where I was trying to check. That's where you check the store, check your golfer, and I forget what else is on there. I think maybe options are on there. I forget what else. But that kind of swaps you through some of the categories of the menus. And the triggers get through further categories inside those categories. So the different parts of the shop, that kind of stuff. But yeah, they have a shop of time available items, a bunch of clothing, golf clubs. There are perks you can purchase. You can purchase all of everything in there with in-game currency that you earn as you play, or you can get it with a lot of that stuff with paid currency that is definitely not necessary unless you're just have more money than time, I guess, but you can't really, I can't seem any way to like pay your way to a better character because the equipment doesn't improve your stats in any way. It just seems like different types of golf clubs and putters and wedges and irons and all that kind of stuff, as well as like different parts that you can put onto your golf clubs, like the shaft and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, that stuff is all cosmetic as far as I can tell. I was surprised not to see the different types of clubs offering any sort of bonus stat stuff, but they might, but they just don't show it well. There's some parts of the menus where it doesn't explain things super well for that. And, but yeah, I purchased a hat because I wanted my dude to have a hat. The neat thing with your outfits, you get a handful of things for your outfits, and you can set different outfits for each round of a tournament. So you can have a round 1, 2, 3, 4 set of items, and I think one for a practice round as well. So that's a neat touch because that's, you know, I think golfers do. Tiger Woods especially was famous for wearing the red shirt on Sundays when he was in the hunt for a win.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. So that's definitely a nice little touch that they have there. Mm-hmm. So I have different outfits for my guy. I basically go into the fourth round of the first tournament I am in. And I don't have it on. I don't think I have it on any sort of difficulty stuff. I don't know that they have that, but you can start your golfer in the lowest ranking tour for the PGA. I assume that's like the fresh out of college tour kind of thing. You can make a male or female golfer, so you can go through that stuff pretty well. Or you can just jump into the PGA Tour proper. They have challenges. Some for the specific courses, some for just in general that you can have tracked, which I have the one for the specific course I'm on, which has like, you know, play around on this course. One has, you know, get this much amount of yards in drives on this course. And there's one for, I think, getting an eagle on a specific hole kind of thing, which I haven't been able to do that yet. But it's either I'm good enough at this game that I'm almost in first place after three rounds, because the other golfers aren't particularly good, and there's not a ton of big names in this. I assume some of them might be, like Tiger Woods is exclusive to the 2K golf PGA game. Okay. I'm not sure if they have any others that are exclusive to them, but there are some named golfers. I had to like look up the world rankings to be like, okay, this person's a real golfer. This person's real. There was a guy named like John Huh, like H-U-H. I was like, there's no way that's a real person's name. And I looked it up and I couldn't find anything.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's a whole thing. The issues I have besides the buggy menu stuff is that there are no subtitles. And if you've ever watched golf on TV, they talk a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And when I am playing, I would like to know, you know, exactly what they're talking about, because I'm, you know, skipping through stuff as I am, you know, trying to figure out like where I need to hit it. And, you know, you do it like Hot Shots Golf where you zoom ahead to look at like where it's going to land and then take into account, you know, the wind and the lie and figure out like where you're going to want to aim for, that kind of stuff. You can still do that here. And I'm looking at that and hearing these guys talk, and they're not really talking about anything all that specific. They'll talk about the course and these holes, but through three rounds, I've heard some repeat stuff. So it's not really too much of a surprise, but for a lot of that stuff they do when they do the flyover and all that, it'd be nice to have subtitles.
Mm-hmm.
That's like an issue I have with MLB The Show 23 with their Negro League storyline stuff.
Yeah,
where, you know, they just straight up just have, you know, video of a dude talking, and it's like, why isn't there subtitles for this?
Yeah,
They do have subtitles for the commentary in game, but in the in those like cutscenes, essentially, those there's nothing there. And it's like that should be more of a thing when you have commentaries. Like just have it, you know, they're all reading off specific scripts. It's not like it's a should be that hard of a thing, but that would be a thing I would like to see. But yeah, everything else around that, you know, you finish a round, you get XP for, you know, all the birdies and eagles and pars and all that you're doing in the round. I've been leveling up every single time. You get skill points to put in like a skill upgrade system that's like Mass Effect. So, you know, you got a bunch of blocks from, you know, left to right that you're working towards the right, and there are certain blocks that are filled in that will unlock a special ability for you to have that are like different golf abilities. You know, one's like, I forget what they call it. It's like a Texas wedge, which is your ability to use a wedge on the green. When you're, when the game technically won't let you, this is like a thing you can do. So if you're like on a fringe or, you know, close to the edge, far away enough from the hole, you can just say like, well, let me just use the wedge so I can knock it in, you know, closer to the hole more efficiently, that kind of thing. But it works pretty well for this game. Everything here, it's just, it feels a little unpolished. Maybe they probably rushed it out to get it out in time for the Masters this weekend, because that's, I guess the thing that's exclusive to this game is the majors, the Masters, British Open, US Open, and I forget what the other Masters is. The Players Championship, maybe. I forget what the other one. Like those holes, those specific events are all in here. But they also have all the other stuff. And yeah, like the career mode, you have a week by week thing. So you're playing, you know, four holes. It can, I think the default setting it had is like, oh, show me the big moments. Like, have me play those. So you don't have to play every single hole, every single, you know, stroke on there. If you don't want to, it's sort of the way that they've been doing on Madden now, where it's like, ah, just have me play the important moments and simulate everything else. Because I want to get through this fast. And you can definitely do that, but I don't know if you'll get an equivalent amount of XP from that versus playing every single hole, that kind of thing. But it seems like the golf RPG stuff is pretty neat, at least, being able to see the progression from, you know, how far I'm able to hit it on the first tee and, you know, getting a little bit better at the putting and the, you know, the approach shots and that kind of stuff is definitely noticeable with that. I think at some point I'll unlock a straight up like power shot off the first tee or off the tee, that kind of stuff. So that seems neat, but it's coming out at a bad time for me, like buying this to play anymore beyond the 10 hours. So I'd probably wait until the summer, whenever it gets to half off or so. That seems like a thing time that I will jump into that. But if you've been wanting one of these, this seems like a good one to get. I've not played the 2K ones to know if they're really all that different. I think I have one of them on Steam because from one of the Humble Bundles, maybe the Ukraine one from last year or something like that, I have it from, but I have not had a chance to check it out yet. But that's cool. Have a good PGA Tour game, which has been off and on for the past like 10, 15 years or so, mostly since when Tiger Woods had his whole affair thing, just kind of caused a lot of damage to that series. So yeah, that's been that. Also been playing more MLB The Show 23. Been doing a lot of the Diamond Dynasty stuff. I finally started up a Road of the Show character for the career mode, which is probably the latest I've done that in one of these for a while. The Diamond Dynasty stuff has been pretty good as is. So they got an Easter egg hunt event going on this weekend that just wants you to play a bunch of different things in the games in the Diamond Dynasty mode that I'm trying to unlock, which gets you more cards. They throw diamond cards at you constantly, which are the top tier of cards,
mm-hmm.
usually rated 90 or up. Or like 85 and up, I guess. They do a good job of getting you some better players so you're not playing with scrubs and trying to work your way up with that. But that's been that. And the last game I've been playing is Chia, which I've been just playing some more of that. Not really doing much progress on the story, mostly just exploring and finding more of the collectibles and such. So that's been pretty much it for me. So how about you, Brandon?
Well, I finished Uncharted Thieves Collection, which, you know, I had, you know, already played Uncharted back then and, you know, loved it because it still holds up. It's an amazing game. I had not played the other game, the collection, which is Uncharted The Lost Legacy. I mean, I started it in fits and starts, but I never really went through with it. There was always something that made, you know, that came in the way or whatever. Just that. But this time I actually played it to completion. And honestly, one of the things I did love, they sort of expanded the Uncharted formula a bit by focusing most of the game in more or less open world environment. That looks absolutely gorgeous, pretty much all of it. And it's definitely a change from, you know, the normal, you know, Uncharted games, which are pretty usually linear. The other thing I will say, I Chloe Frazier as protagonist than Nathan Drake. She's just a better character overall. I think she's a lot more fun. Like, Nathan Drake is fine, but he's kind of one note, whereas Chloe's a lot more, I guess, likable, I guess. So I would, you know, if Naughty Dog ever decides to start doing more Uncharted games, I've heard that the idea would be that they would have Nathan's daughter Cassie take over as the protagonist, and I thought, like, the good idea would be, like, Chloe sort of take over the mentor role the same way that, you know, Sully is Nathan. So, yeah, finished that. And I also finished once more, and I'm hoping to have my review for that done before the end of the week. Hopefully by this time next week. It's a lot. It was, you know, I have thoughts. It was definitely fun, but I also understand why it was kind of a niche title back when it originally came out, because as gorgeous as it is, it is kind of a basic RTS. And because of how intensely gorgeous its graphics are, it can be really difficult to ascertain what's going on sometimes, but I'll save all that for the review. Since all that stuff's behind me, I have been playing Evil's Phoenix Rising, which, gotta be honest, so far is probably my favorite Ubisoft game that they've released fairly recently. Honestly, like, I mean, let's be honest, it's not terribly original. Like, it's very obvious from the get-go that a lot of the guts of Breath of the Wild are in this game's design. Specifically, the climbing and flying mechanics are just straight out of Breath of the Wild. And it's also got, like, bits and pieces of Assassin's Creed in it, too. But, you know, it's based around Greek mythology, which is, you know, one of my favorite subjects, and it also kind of takes a very sort of coy, side-eyed look at the Greek pantheon the same way that Hades did. And I was like, yeah, sure, great. You can definitely tell, though, and keep in mind, I've updated it to, like, the PS5 version, the upgrade, and you can definitely tell that it's kind of a game from the last, still very much like a game of the last generation. especially in the character animations, they're just not as fluid as they could be otherwise. But still, extremely fun game, very entertaining. Really liked it, really liking it. Might even get the expansions for it. I don't know yet. And I've also been playing Ghostwire Tokyo, which is, it's okay. I love the whole idea behind it. It has very sort of restricted UI, which I like, you know, but my biggest issue with it is that it's so slow. the character that you play as, he basically moves like he's in molasses, and the combat can be entertaining sometimes, but a lot of times it can be kind of tedious as well. I gotta play more of it to really get an idea of what I think about it, but so far it's kind of a meh for me. Yeah, that's what I've been playing. What about you, Danrib?
Yeah, so when we had the show last, I was pretty much finishing up Chia, and mm-hmm. I actually beat it that night. I didn't realize how close I was to the end just because I was preoccupied doing some of the extra stuff. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you what, the stuff you do at the end pretty much almost has nothing to do with any of the like actual gameplay you were doing, you know, at the very beginning or at the middle. So that was, I don't want to say off-putting, but it was definitely weird and didn't really feel like it fit there. But I'm pretty happy with the way it ended. Again, like, this is a really beautiful game. Love the characters, love the environment. And I just like the way that the ending was handled. And then, you know, obviously this is an open world game. So even though like you're done with the story, there is still plenty of stuff to do out in the world. And the way it transitioned back to all that was pretty interesting as well. I don't see myself, you know, going back to it or trying to get the platinum. I feel like I'm done with the game, but it was definitely a pleasurable experience. So, you know, there's that. I also picked up Resident Evil 4. I played a little bit last night, maybe for about 20 minutes. I don't really have very much experience with the original version of the game. I actually played that through a GameCube demo, and I kept dying in it. So, and that was ultimately what made me decide like to never get it. But from what I've played so far, it definitely feels like a very modern game. You know, you have the over-the-shoulder third-person gameplay that's kind of like what Sony does a lot with their hotels these days. And yeah, it's been really interesting. I got to through the first part where you enter like this house, find the cop dead, and you try to leave, but you can't because it's locked. You know, typical survival horror stuff. And I say typical like I have experience, but I really don't. Like, I've never actually played through a Resident Evil game in my life. So I'm hoping this is a game that actually sticks, but we'll go from there. Mm. Aside from that, haven't been playing a whole lot. I did watch the Mario movie twice. And yeah, since I'm not on the other podcast, I'll just go ahead and talk about, you know, my thoughts on it. I will have a review up tonight regarding the Mario movie. And I will say this. If you've ever enjoyed any Mario game, there is no reason why you can't enjoy this movie, unless you're expecting it to be way too much. Like, you know, obviously it has a Rotten Tomato score of under 50, but these are from like quote unquote professional film critics. But then when you read reviews from like places like GameSpot, Kotaku, IGN, they gave it much higher ratings just because, like, you know, we understand Mario. Like, we've been there and done that, and the way that it handled a lot of the certain aspects of, you know, both the gameplay and the fandom is absolutely fantastic. Like, what actually sold me over before even watching the movie was the fact that the trailers had some of the old music orchestrated in crazy ways. Like, the first trailer actually had, like, I want to say 6 songs from different games over the course of 2 minutes. And I thought that was really impressive. And they do that throughout the entire game. Not only that, but they have references galore here. Like, you have Mario Kart, you have Kid Icarus, you have Punch-Out. You know, I don't want to say too much because I don't want to spoil anything, but just the everything they've done just for me worked out. Like, this is easily the best video game movie I have ever seen, and I look forward to this perhaps becoming a series of its own. I know a lot of people have issues with Chris Pratt being Mario, but I thought he did a fantastic job. Charlie Day was amazing as Luigi. Anya Taylor-Joy was fantastic as Princess Peach, who was actually one of the better characters in the entire film. Jack Black did an amazing Bowser. The only character who I was, I don't want to say disappointed with, but I just didn't feel was right, was the casting of Fred Armisen as Cranky Kong. Like, you know, when you watch Cranky Kong speak, the voice that comes out of the Cranky Kong character just did not fit for me. Fred Armisen just sounded like another young guy, whereas when I see Cranky Kong talk, I expect like some sort of coot, and that didn't happen. Seth Rogen was awesome as Donkey Kong, and yeah, like, this is a spectacular movie. I mean, as far as, like, you know, the experience, it's really, really fun. I would Definitely recommend this to any Mario fan to watch it in the theaters just because of how beautiful it is. Illumination did a fantastic job. Again, like, if you don't like, you know, Minions or Sing or any of those other Illumination movies, it's tough to say that you'd really enjoy this. But if you're a fan of all of anything Mario, like, there's absolutely no reason why this can't be an enjoyable film. So, yeah, that's pretty much it for me. I will, next week, I won't be here because I'll actually be at Super Nintendo World. So when I get back, I'll go ahead and talk about that as well. So, yeah, fun stuff.
All right. So, yeah, let's get to some news. And, yeah, we'll be talking about the new games you can get on your subscription services. PlayStation Plus games with gold. PlayStation Plus has a pretty solid month. They got Meet Your Maker, brand new game. Kind of doing something with actually a bigger budget game because it's like a $29.99 game. Maybe $40, I forget. But yeah, pretty good value for launch. So you can kind of check it out without having to put up a bunch of money for that. And yeah, that is PS4 and PS5. Sackboy, A Big Adventure is the next one. Also PS4 and PS5. That's a really good 3D platformer featuring, you know, Sackboy of the Little Big Planet games. Playing more of a game that's maybe in the style of a Super Mario 3D World, which makes for a pretty fun change of pace for what you expect out of, you know, the series in general. So that's a fun one to check out.
Yeah, I don't remember. Were any of the Little Big Planet games also a 3D platformer, or is it just Sackboy that went that route?
Yeah, the Little Big Planet games were...
They were all 2D, right?
2D.
Yeah.
I think by 3, they had like lanes you could jump it back into, or they all had lanes, I think. But I think 3 had more lane stuff going on. To be kind of semi-3D.
I did get Sackboy's Big Adventure at launch. Definitely an enjoyable game. I've never finished it, but it's always like something fun to come back to, whether it's by yourself or with a few others. So definitely a good get for PS Plus. These other two games I know absolutely nothing about, but I did claim them, so.
Yeah, the fun thing about Sackboy is that they keep putting up free costumes for it. Like, there's a bunch of them for all the big Sony games that have been coming out, even Gran Turismo. There's like an outfit that is just a race car driver outfit with a wheel on there. So that's the thing. Go check out the DLC page for it, because there's a ton of shit there for you to grab. And the last game here is Tales of Iron for PS4 and PS5. All these games are PS4 and PS5. But this is supposed to be an RPG-ish kind of game. I don't know what flavor it is, but I've heard good things about this one. I just haven't pulled the trigger on purchasing it, but this makes that a little easier. I'm looking forward to playing this one at some point. I might stream it to kind of show it off, but that's another solid game to have on there. But yeah, that's one that's where you're playing as a mouse in sort of a medieval kind of framework with your sword fighting a bunch of looks like lizards or frogs or something with teeth. So, yeah, there you go.
Looks fine.
Yeah. So that's your PS Plus lineup. Pretty good one. Then we'll get to Games with Gold, which still just has two games. For April 1st to the 30th, there's Out of Space Couch Edition. I think this one is... I'm going to double check. It's like a strategy game of a sort. I guess like a couch co-op kind of thing, but you're running this spaceship house of sorts and trying to, generate resources, recycle trash and alien goo, buy and build new technologies, take care of one another. Yeah, like almost like a tycoon-ish kind of strategy game. So that looks neat. As you can check out right now. Starting April 16th to May 15th, there's Peaky Blinders Mastermind, a property that people here in the U.S. have no clue what that is.
Nope.
Because that is a very British show, though I guess it's also on Netflix. So you may have seen it at some point. But I believe this is more of a puzzle adventure game of sorts. So, yeah, that's a game looks pretty decent. Maybe by Future Lab. Okay, so that's kind of neat. I think this one's been out for a little bit. Yeah, since 2020. So that could be neat if you're into that property. But yeah, just the two games there to check out. So there you go for that. But in addition to that, Game Pass also has some stuff coming out here for the next week or so. Let's see. Available at this point, there is Loop Hero on console and PC. That is a very cool like time loop roguelite kind of game where you are wielding like a deck of cards that you're using to build out this world to have your hero run through this loop to kill enemies and get rewards. And based on sort of what buildings and enemies and such you put around, you can lead to, you know, different kinds of resource generation that can lead to, you know, building out a lot of stuff here to, you know, and you're trying to get them out of that loop at the right time before they die so that you can keep as much of that materials and such to take back to the it's like a base of operations, I guess, that you're then building out in sort of a Rogue Legacy kind of style to, you know, build out your ability to survive more in the time loop portion, kind of going back and forth, that kind of thing. That's a cool game to check out for console and PC. Should be pretty easy to deal with either way. So that's one to check out. Also available now, Iron Brigade. I'm surprised they took them until now to get that onto Game Pass. There might have been rights issues with that, though. Microsoft was the one that published it originally, so I don't know that that was maybe too much of an issue there, because I know at one point that game's rights reverted back to Double Fine. But I'm surprised it took that long. But that's a cool game where it's one of those loot-based games where you're trying to you know, move around in your mobile trench mech that to destroy, you know, these aliens that are invading this area you're in, and you're sort of building defenses and such to try to stop them. A little bit of a like a Gears Horde mode kind of thing. But you get to control these big mech suits and such, and your character can do lots of weird little emotes and such. That is pretty fun. So that's definitely worth checking out. And let's see, the stuff that's coming in the future. On April 12th, Ghostwire Tokyo will be out, PC and Xbox. That's when that big update will be hitting, the Spider's Thread update. So that'll add some more stuff to that game. So that's worth checking out if you haven't done so before. That looks like NHL 23 hits EA Play, the list, I guess, whatever they call it, April 13th. So if you have Game Pass Ultimate or have EA Play on Xbox, PlayStation, or PC, you'll be able to check that out. Play some of that as the, I believe, the NHL playoffs are starting here pretty soon. So there you go for that. And then April 18th, the newest Minecraft game, Minecraft Legends, will be out. Console and PC. It's also on all the other consoles. And yeah, that seems like an interesting kind of game to make. It's like an action RTS of sorts where you're controlling a character and able to lead, you know, an army of units to fight the bad guys and take over their outposts and whatever. I don't know if that'll be one that does very well for people, but they're trying out something. Much like with the Diablo-like, that is all right. But there you go.
Yeah.
So yeah, some decent stuff there. And what else did they mention here? Yeah, the EA Sports PGA Tour Early Access Trial with EA Play. Yeah, that's also worth checking out. And I guess Everspace 2 hit full release. It's been in Early Access on Game Pass, so I guess it's still on there. Now it's hit 1.0. So that's something else you can check out. And yeah, they've been doing something. They've changed some things with the quest stuff and the reward stuff, because no longer in the rewards app on the Xbox dashboard can you earn get rewarded for achievements in that. They give you points for essentially clicking on a thing that takes you to the Game Pass app, where then you can earn some rewards points there for the achievement stuff, because it's been buggy in the rewards app for a long time. And I guess they finally made some adjustments to that. But that's like the big thing I've seen lately for that. So yeah, there you go. Some stuff to check out. And yeah, let's see. We got some updates for games. God of War Ragnarok has a big update now. That adds New Game Plus. That adds, let's see. Yeah, new equipment and increased level cap, new enchantments. All this and more, like the original. They do a lot of cool stuff to make it less of a the same replay, just numbers are changed. They just sort of change, enemy placements, maybe some of the types of enemies you see early on, that kind of stuff, to make it feel like a better and, more interesting experience. And yeah, they're talking about some of the new equipment and such that's in here. They can get a Spartan armor, which is Kratos without anything on his, above his waist. So if you want to see that, there's a lot of that kind of stuff here. So that's neat. For people that want to keep playing that. Yeah, there's a lot here that's mentioned. Also, you can skip cinematics in New Game Plus, so if you don't want to see any more of that, you can definitely do that. So there you go. And No Man's Sky is a big update called the Interceptor update. Where if you want to go to Forsaken Sentinel Worlds, as they say here, explore corrupted planets, fight a legion of challenging new robotic guardians, hijack their technology, steal their ships, harvest their resources, destroy their freighters, and much, much more. It's available on all platforms, and VR and all that. So they have a big old post here with a bunch of the stuff. The corrupted planets look pretty cool with these like growing crystals on them. I'm guessing feeds into some of this. And so here, darkness spreads through the Sentinel Horde. Many fortified worlds have succumbed to corruption, the strange crystals spouting from the earth. Sprouting from the earth, and their robot guardians twisted into bizarre new forms. Enjoy these purple haze worlds to find new buildings, crash interceptors, secret equipment, and more. Okay, they changed a thing for VR that I was kind of a little annoyed by. So you had to like hold your controller in a way that you could have this little screen pop up that you could then point at to pull up, your inventory or whatever. They let you kind of reattach that to different parts of your hand now, so you don't have to hold it in the same way. Do that stuff, so that's cool. There's a lot here. I'm not going to go into all of it, so if you want to see more of that, this looks really cool. Definitely worth checking out if you are playing No Man's Sky or have taken breaks from it. All sorts of cool stuff there. And yeah, this, let's see, next up here, back to the subscription services. Nintendo Switch Online Plus Expansion Pack is getting a new game on, let's see, I think it's Wednesday the 12th. That is Pokemon Stadium. The first one. I think the second one's supposed to be coming at some point. But they've got the first one out there. Let's see, what else here do they say? People hope this would include trading with Pokemon Ho, but that doesn't seem to be in there at the in any way. No, it mentions Pokemon cannot be transferred to this game in the fine print on the trailer. But it does have 4-player online multiplayer. So you can play with some friends or any of the mini games, I guess, as well. So that's a neat choice. It'd be cool to get like the Game Boy Pokemon games in there and have some compatibility with this in those games. mm-hmm. That kind of stuff that those games had back in the day.
Yeah.
But yeah, there you go.
All right.
And speaking of old games, Square Enix finally announced when the Final Fantasy Pixel Remaster series is coming out on PS4 and Switch.
Finally.
And it'll be out soon, April 19th.
Mm-hmm.
You can get all six games in a bundle for $74.99. Final Fantasy 1 and 2 are $12 each. 3, 4, 5, and 6 are $18 each. So you get a little bit of a discount there. But yeah, that's same as the Steam versions.
Mm-hmm.
Is the release date like something we didn't know? Because I remember them going on the website physically and selling out immediately. But I don't remember like whether there was a release date yet. So I'm assuming this is
the new one.
Okay.
The only thing we had is that I think the retail stuff, people are starting to get emails that they were going to be shipping pretty soon.
Mm-hmm.
But people were like, well, maybe that means it's out soon, or just them making sure they got, you know, all the stock they need for that. Yeah. As that stuff has been out selling out constantly, the random times it pops up. Mm. But yeah, this is looking pretty neat. I'm curious if they're going to update the PC versions with some of the stuff they've mentioned here. As they, on the website page, they mentioned that, let's see, they've changed the soundtracks. They have a new alternate soundtrack, original and rearranged soundtracks. They have an alternate font option. So if you want the weird mobile font or the new pixel-based font, which is not like the original fonts these games had, because those are more blocky fonts. It's just more like what you may have had on like the PS1 games.
Yeah.
It's a lot skinnier kind of font to it.
Yeah. I remember when they made the announcement and they tweeted that, oh, we have an old style font. It's not one for one, but it's there. And I have to admit, it does look better, but I thought it was hilarious that they ended up like making a tweet to announce this. And it's funny because it's pretty relevant.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's the kind of thing where people have been complaining about it, and so much so in the PC version, you could literally just make your, or you could swap out the font in a random folder in the wherever it's hidden at on the PC. So people created, you know, files to put your whatever font you wanted in there.
Mm-hmm.
So people could get around it, but doing this, you know, in the games themselves would be a nice thing to have. But like a lot of the other Final Fantasy re-releases, there's the ability to turn off random encounters so that you can just wander around if you're tired of fighting, you know, every 5 feet, that kind of stuff. But they also have things to boost your experience gained by up to 4 times. So you can, you know, do a lot of grinding early on and maybe, you know, take breaks from fighting to try to figure out what you're doing there.
Mm-hmm.
So they have a lot of that kind of stuff. I'm trying to see what else they mention here. Like, it's just descriptions of what each of the games are about. But yeah, it's $75 is a pretty decent discount. I was doing the math here. It's $96 separately, but also, as is the case with Square Enix stuff, if you're not interested in paying $74 for, you know, old Final Fantasy games, you can just wait for sale.
Because
that'll happen at some point. And maybe get the ones you want, maybe get the others on sale, whatever works for you. Luckily with the Steam versions, they had codes that were available on like Green Man Gaming or whatever. I ended up getting it for less than $70 for all six. I think like 60 something, 65 bucks, something like that. So that was a pretty good deal, because the amount of game you get out of these is pretty good for the value compared to a lot of these re-releases. But I also recommend pulling up guides for them, because they're old SRPGs and going to be easy to get lost. Especially if you take breaks and you forget what you were doing. So yeah, that's cool that they finally have that. I think the PS4 versions, if you buy them, you will get themes with them and avatars for each game. So if you like that, That'll be something. They only mention A-Theme and Avatar for each title, mm-hmm. which I assume means you'll get ones for the logos and not for characters or maybe the main character. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever that means, but I guess they say for the Switch versions, you'll get two themed wallpapers for each individual game,
mm-hmm.
which I assume are going to be the same ones that came with the Steam versions. So that is a whole thing. But you can mm-hmm. probably find them on the internet. People have probably uploaded them for other people to get because they're just fucking wallpapers. You can't do anything with them on the Switch.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if there are themes for the Switch for that, that would be cool. But yeah, there you go. Those are finally going to be available on console.
Mm-hmm.
You'll be able to have on the Switch and the PS4, PS5, you'll be able to have 1 through 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, but get the two 10 games, the 12, there's 13's not on PlayStation. That's only on Xbox. But you can also get 14 and 15 and 16 on PS5. So
mm-hmm.
you can get most of the series there.
Mm-hmm.
Switch is a little less there. I imagine 13 will probably get some sort of remaster treatment at some point.
Mm-hmm.
They sure would like to be able to sell them outside of the Xbox backwards compatibility stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they could probably make some good adjustments there on those games.
Mm-hmm.
Because 13 especially is a drag for quite a while
mm-hmm.
until you get out of the loop of tutorials that dominates like the first chunk of that game.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there you go. 6 of the old Final Fantasies.
Mm-hmm.
And that is good to see.
Mm.
There's still plenty of other Final Fantasies they can sell you. So there you go. Let's see. What else is here happening? April 21st, Homestead Arcana is coming to Xbox and PC. And particularly, I think it's going to be on Game Pass for those platforms. That is published by Skybound Games, developed by Serenity Forge. It's kind of one of those chill farming lifestyle mm-hmm. RPG kind of things. But you're a witch with magic stuff going on
mm-hmm.
as the miasma has taken over the land. And you're dealing with all of that, crafting spells, mm-hmm. cultivating materials for that stuff, and revitalizing the corrupted realm. They had an ID at Xbox showcase thing on
mm-hmm.
the Xbox Twitch channel. Luckily, it wasn't hosted by Twitch, so it wasn't like a four-hour thing with no archive anywhere. It was like an hour-long thing mm-hmm. that didn't have a ton to it, but, you know, there you go.
Yeah.
they're showing stuff that they had already announced mm-hmm. dates for and shown off. The big thing they had was, like, showing off a little bit of the
mm-hmm.
the new DLC for Vampire Survivors.
Mm-hmm.
It's also out this week. So it was like, okay. They talked to one of the community people for that game. So
mm-hmm.
yeah. The other game is coming out in April. The last one that got announced, Live Alive, is coming to PS5, PS4, and PC April 27th.
Very good.
Demo's out now. And I like this trend of Square Enix not publishing stuff, not letting Nintendo publish a thing and make it exclusive to their platforms forever.
Yeah.
So yeah, that'll be available on these other platforms. I think it's even got a
mm-hmm.
PS Plus discount on PS5 and PS4 to make it $40 instead of $50.
Mm-hmm.
So you get a pretty good discount there. There's demos out now on Steam and PlayStation, so you can check it out.
Mm.
I'm going to see if the Steam version also has that discount. Yeah, it does. So it's $39.99
mm-hmm.
through May 11th. So you got time even after that. You can play the demo.
Mm-hmm.
Like it transfers over. Maybe get a little bonus with that. And that's a game that's very much shares some DNA with the Octopath Traveler games in terms of, you know, it covering, you know, characters on their own story paths that mm-hmm. have been separate from the others, but it's not as coordinated as Octopath Traveler is. I know you've played this, Brandon.
Yeah.
I probably highly recommend it.
Yeah. I appreciate like all the graphical updates they've done, but it's also like you can clearly tell like this was originally a Super Famicom game in a lot of ways. But it's sort of distributed sort of storytelling across all these different characters and storylines and everything, and even like different gameplay types, because each particular individual story has like its own little sort of trick as to how it does. Like some, like there's one that's essentially a survival horror game. There's another heavily focuses on stealth. There's one that's sort of like a fighting game, more or less, and you know all of that. It's definitely worth playing. It's a very good game. I will say though, it really is going to depend on how you know you feel about those old kind of SNES RPGs, really. Yeah, I definitely recommend it.
Yeah, I would probably say pull up a guide with it. Like, just play with a guide whenever you're not sure what you need to do next.
Yeah.
Because they'll probably tell you, like, every little thing you can find around and know, like, what you should do so you can know where to go and not wander around as much as you can in these old RPGs and kind of get lost.
Mm.
So that kind of stuff's good to have.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, speaking of old RPGs, our next date here is Rhapsody Marl Kingdom Chronicles, a collection of the second and third Rhapsody games that I don't think came out over here. Originally, yeah. I think we just got the first one on the PS1.
Yeah.
So I'm still confused why we don't have the first one, but you can at least get the other two.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, that'll be out August 29th in North America, September 1st in Europe, and September 8th in Oceania. That is good to see. Those are kind of have a bit of music to them, musical kind of games to them, hence the names there. But yeah, that'll be Steam, PS5, Switch, and PC for those games. There's also a $90 limited edition on the NIS America store. Includes a copy of the deluxe edition, a hardcover art book, two-disc original soundtrack, another two-disc original soundtrack for each of the games, a set of three Royal Crescendo art cards, acrylic display, another acrylic display, a cloth poster, and a collector's box. So decent for the price there. But yeah, there you go. Some more old RPGs you can play here later this year. So yeah, there you go. And yeah, speaking of old games, there was that TMNT collection last year, the Cowabunga collection, that people liked a lot. They still continue to update it to add more games that can play online multiplayer. I think all of the NES games that allowed co-op now have online support. So that's a cool thing. But they also announced that it hit over 1 million units sold worldwide. Well, some stats on there, like 6 million pizzas eaten, 2 million of Shredder's plans shredded, 350 million of foot soldiers defeated, and yeah, 1 million times the turtles saved their friends. So yeah, that's a really cool collection. Definitely worth checking out if you have any sort of affection for the Ninja Turtles. And yeah, there you go. Some more cool stuff for that. Then let's get to some industry news of sorts. Joseph Staten sort of came into the Halo Infinite dev cycle near the end to help them finish it on a good note. And they kind of mostly did it, but the multiplayer is the part that continued to have trouble still to this day. But I think when they had the bit of shakeup with 343, he moved over to Microsoft in some sort of publishing role. But now he has announced that he is leaving Microsoft, saying, "Hey, folks, I'm indeed leaving Microsoft. I'll have more info to share soon. But for now, I'd like to thank all of my Xbox colleagues for all their understanding and support as I embark on a new adventure. Yeah, Microsoft also put out a statement thanking him for his work there, wishing him the best in his new adventure. So, yeah, definitely a big deal for him leaving for the second time.
Mm-hmm.
The previous time was when Bungie left Microsoft and he went with them to work on Destiny and not stick around to work on Halo again, but eventually returned. So I'm assuming he's going to start up a new studio thing or maybe go back to Bungie. I don't know. Seems like he's got plenty of options for that. So wish him the best of luck. And yeah, let's see. Definitely the biggest news of last week was that E3 was rocked by a number of companies announcing that they were not going to be there. Ubisoft, who had previously said, oh, if there's going to be an E3, we'll be there. Just pledging their support. And then they said last week, like, we're not going to be at E3. We still have a thing there in LA, but we won't be at E3 proper. And then I think Sega and Tencent announced they weren't going to be there. And then that prompted ESA to fully announce that they were not going to be having E3. That both the digital and physical events for E3 2023 are canceled.
Yeah.
Seems like just a lot of issues with making it work for the publishers, especially sort of things coming together so late, so much so like, you know, end of March was the point where companies needed to have their budget if they were going to be holding events around E3. They needed that stuff to be nailed down, and it seems like that definitely wasn't there for them to hold a get a booth at E3, that kind of stuff. And I imagine at this point, a lot of publishers just like being able to hold their own events.
I mean, because and even that, they can just, you know, do things on YouTube, you know, or just streaming, because, you know, like they can curate it all itself and they don't have to, you know, buy out a venue or hire any staff or anything like that. They can just shoot a video and put it up on YouTube and it's a done deal. It's much more cost effective.
Yeah, though for an E3 thing, they like to have, you know, an event for press to come and play their games, talk about them, write up something or do a video or whatever. It's probably much more cost effective to do a separate event that you know that everybody that's there is going to probably cover your products versus competing with, you know, dozens of other companies' booths for time and attention for content production. So that probably makes a lot more sense there. And then they can also, you know, stream from those locations for the people at home for any, you know, important information they have versus, you know, holding down an event at the LA Convention Center and making that work for everybody. In a way that, you know, makes sense both as a public event and as a press event. And it seems like that's becoming more and more of a challenge as, you know, the publishers like holding their own things. You know, Microsoft is going to hold their own thing. Sony and Nintendo are also going to do whatever they wanted, but not at E3. Those are sort of the big ones that got revealed early is like, oh, all three of these are probably not going to be at E3. And if they're not there, then who else is going to be there? And we saw, you know, a lot of people having those same concerns. So it seems like they are going to, you know, start over from scratch for a 2024 show, but they're not committing to it or a date or anything. So very much a lot of people are concerned about that. But I think that's just that's something that they need to get publishers involved with early on to see like what they want specifically and how they can address the issues that cause this particular show to not work out.
I remember saying back in 2021 that COVID might have been death nail for E3, and I mean, I don't want to say I was right because it's still kind of too soon to call, but I mean, what can you say?
Yeah, though I think that was happening long before that when they were doing the shows the last few years that were public facing, and people were like, there's just not much here.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people were getting kind of what they wanted out of the show at the first dates, and then just weren't coming back. So the show just got progressively more empty
mm-hmm.
as they went, in a way that's just like, I don't know what the ESA has in store for this event,
mm-hmm.
but they do not currently have like plans that should give anybody any sort of confidence in whatever is going to happen there.
Mm.
And that seems to have borne out that, you know, when they finally decided to, you know, shop it out to an external company,
mm-hmm.
ReedPop made a lot of sense, but also seems like that happened way too late to get a show out this year mm-hmm. that made sense for anybody. Especially as, you know, COVID is less of an issue, though obviously it's still an issue and a concern. Mm-hmm. Like GDC just happened and had a nice wave of people turning up mm-hmm. positive on that thing just from that show. And it's like, yeah, that's just going to be the thing going forward, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. People are going to have to be very vigilant on that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't make it easy to do this stuff as long as they have, you know, requirements of masking up and all that.
Mm-hmm.
That'll help mitigate some of the issues. But yeah, this is just going to be a struggle for the ESA to get something done.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's definitely a tough blow to, you know, E3 as a whole. Tough to even imagine it coming back to the way it used to, or even that one year where it was in Santa Monica. But yeah, like the main thing is, if you can't get the big boys to go, it's going to be tough to get anybody to care, whether it be journalists, whether it be the general public. You need those big names because, you know, an indie event, as awesome as those games and developers and publishers are, it can't sell themselves. And yeah, like they're going to have to find a way to make it work, or else that's pretty much it. In the meantime, you have Jeff Keighley over here with Summer Game Fest, and they appear to be like ready to roll. They have a theater with, you know, they already booked their theater. Like I was in LA and I saw the marquee already there, and they're ready. But yeah, I mean, it just goes to show that, again, like without the big guys, you can't really do anything. And it's hard to really imagine how it could really change, because in my opinion, and you know, I'm not going to say I'm an expert or anything, but part of the reason here is people aren't willing to shell out the money for the space needed to really promote their stuff. Mm-hmm. The LA Convention Center really charges an arm and a leg in order to make that happen. And granted, yeah, these are big companies, but at the same time, there's no real return here. Yeah, you have the hype generated from the journalists who are, you know, covering the event, but at the same time, it's like, if you can have your own mini direct or that sort of thing, and have all that be done in house, it's just easier. Like, we've heard way too many stories about various demos being out at E3, and they're just really outdated builds of the game, and they're hardly ever representative of what the final product is. Oftentimes, you also have people waste time making a demo build just for that event, and yeah, it's just tough to really like fathom the amount of effort and money it takes to promote at an event like E3. Granted, you know, ReedPop or whatever they're called, you know, they have packs and that serves its own purposes, and you wonder why the big companies aren't pulling out of that. But, you know, E3 is just going to have to evolve somehow, some way. Either that or just give it all to Jeff. Figure it out that way. But that's all I got there.
Yeah, it's just an issue of, like, Summer Game Fest makes sense because there's just one big, like, showcase event of, here's a bunch of trailers and some people we can talk to about what they're going to show off. And that's pretty low stakes for any company that's working with him. And they know that they're going to get, you know, set amount of eyeballs from that.
Mm.
And then they can just, you know, rent out their own space, you know, put a bunch of TVs and dev units in there to put a bunch of games up for people to play, and, you know, invites, you know, a bunch of people that, you know, could cover that stuff and make it pretty simple for them to do that stuff without too much of a need to set up a big booth that, you know, is a one-time thing, because they're not always going to be reusable for the cost that stuff makes. Because you can go look up, you know, videos of booths from the old shows and see how ridiculous some of them were. EA had one that's just this big video dome.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, how the fuck do you use that again for other shows? Mm-hmm. Especially, you know, having that deconstructed after the show and then rebuilt elsewhere, and how much that costs to transport around and all that. And that's a thing where, you know, that was like 2005, 2006. Like,
mm-hmm.
I imagine those, the resolution on those, you know, the screens is probably, you know, very poor compared to what we have now, versus just buying up some big 4K TVs and using those for the cost. It definitely becomes sort of a general, just, you know, cost of the opportunity and making the best with the stuff that you can do more easily with this stuff. You know, setting up event spaces is pretty simple compared to like an E3 booth for that stuff. So yeah, E3, it's probably not a thing that we need anymore. The companies have pretty easy ways to share the news they want to share, whether they need people in a space to play the newest builds of these games they've got coming up, or a way to invite some of the public in to see things. But, you know, E3 is not as necessary anymore. Especially if you're a publisher of really any size, all of them do their own like digital showcases. It's just not many of them end up getting the attention that a direct has, for both good and bad. Because those directs bring a lot of angry people to them.
Yeah.
They want their one thing to get a new game.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's not there, it's the worst showcase that's ever happened.
Yep.
And they're being screwed over.
Mm-hmm.
And those smaller publishers don't have to deal with that as much.
Because
their audience is just happy to see new stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there you go. E3. But yeah, Ubisoft has announced that they will have an Ubisoft Forward stream on June 12th. And I believe they'll have some sort of event in LA as well. So yeah, an Ubisoft Forward live event on June 12th. And we'll have some event space for press to come in and play stuff. Yeah, Microsoft is doing its own physical event that week, and I imagine some of the other publishers will also be doing stuff. So yeah, there you go. And the last thing we have here also happened last week. Nintendo decided to show a roughly 10-minute video of Tears of the Kingdom gameplay, The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
The game is out about a month from now, of March or May 12th. And we've been wondering, like, what is new about this game? I know there's like land masses in the sky and you can kind of fly around a little bit, and there's the weird shit they've been teasing in some of their teaser trailers, but like, what does any of this mean? And they've started to announce like some of that stuff. And so we got to see this gameplay of sorts that shows off a handful of new abilities that Link has in this game.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly, there's a power called Recall that lets Link return. Like, they mentioned that these like sky islands have like rocks and such falling from them. So a way to get up there is to like hop on the rock and then use the Recall ability, and it will, you know, rise back up into the sky, back to where it was.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a means for getting up there, versus, you know, the old school way of Breath of the Wild, where you would just climb up the sides of walls, especially have a better capability of doing that as you got Korok seeds and use that to upgrade your stamina or your inventory, which I believe Danrib said he didn't realize that was a thing he could do at any point. So he just dealt with that game without having much inventory space to hold weapons. So yeah, that seems like a neat way to get up into the sky.
I think you're talking about the upgrade guy in Kotaro Village who could give you more like weapons space. I had no idea that was a thing, and I was like, all right, just dealt with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so like I will say, watching like the gameplay and stuff, the first thing I realized is that Nintendo had basically been watching all that footage of people playing around and experimenting with the mechanics in Breath of the Wild and basically just decided, all right, yeah, let's go all in on that. Because
that's the physics stuff of like taking the weird platforms and using that weird physics ability you had where you froze something, hit it a bunch, and then whatever force you applied to it would send it flying in a direction. They'd use that to, like, oh, here's a way to get from the starting area to the castle to take on Ganon before you're really supposed to be able to get there.
Yeah. And Nintendo saw that and was like, you know what? Let's sort of make that a big part of the next game. And that's exactly what they did. So two of the big things you'll notice with this, first of all, is the fusion system, which is...
Yeah, they basically said, oh, you hate breaking weapons? Well, we're not doing anything to fix that.
No.
Instead, as you're, like, Link's fighting with the stick, and he's, like, about to break, and so they're like, well, what if we take this, and he puts a rock on it, turns it into a hammer, and now you can use that as a weapon.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, that's neat. I don't know.
Doesn't really fix the problem, but it's also kind of cool. So
it's for the people that like the weapon breaking system.
To be honest, I never... Yeah, to be perfectly honest, the weapon breaking thing never really bothered me all that much. I just saw it as another challenge, but...
Yeah, like... You build up your inventory space, and it's like, all right, I have a selection of things I can use, and usually by the time it breaks, I have killed enough enemies, I can put something else in that slot.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also saw things the same way as Brandon, whereas where it was like, okay, I'll just go ahead and deal with it right there. But like for me, aside from the exploration, what really made Breath of the Wild really fun was the fact that, yeah, you could explore the environments, but you know, if you like actually studied what every item would do for you in addition to the physics, then yeah, you can discover a whole bunch of new things. Like one of the shrines I remember had you like complete a whole bunch of circuitry in order to open the door, and it actually wanted you to move blocks around to find the right electrical current. But what I did was I just grabbed my electric sword, dropped it, and then that went ahead and solved the puzzle. And like the game never actually punished you for any of that, and I like that this new fusion system just allows even more of that stuff to happen. Like, it's a lot of just both common sense and just utter stupidity, and it just works. Yeah. I remember this one time in Majora's Mask where when you shoot your ice arrow into a puddle, it becomes a platform. Like, that stuff blew my mind. And, you know, being able to discover that kind of new stuff is going to be awesome as well.
Yeah, part of the, like, probably really big part of the appeal of Wild was just... The sheer, just seeing the sheer number of mechanics at play and watching how they all interacted with each other in often very surprising ways.
Yeah. The thing that's a touchdown for this, for Breath of the Wild for me, was that it was The Legend of Zelda meets Just Cause 2.
Yeah, pretty much.
Which was that you were given this big open world to explore once you did the couple of missions you needed to do at the beginning of the game. Then you can go around and get, you know, collectibles that slowly increases your ability to call in, you know, for new weapons and vehicles and such, new playthings essentially. And you have these camps and cities and such to go in and explore and take out the bad guys and sort of liberate them.
Mm-hmm.
You also get, you know, grappling hooks that let you launch yourself around in a parachute, paraglider kind of thing. I did not have stamina, so you mean
the wing suit?
No, that's three.
Oh,
two has just the paraglider.
Oh,
essentially
right.
That so that you could, since you didn't have stamina tied to that, because that's a good way to do that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Is that you could just literally chill out and fly around? You know, use your grappling hook to give yourself some more boost to that, and just be able to like, okay, where's something interesting over here? And you look on your map and say like, oh, there's a city over here. I'll go do that. Or, you know, there's a collectible here, and that'll help upgrade my health or something. You know, makes it pretty easy to do a lot of that kind of stuff. And then, you know, once you approach a city, you're like looking around, seeing like, okay, this one I need to blow up some stuff. So let me call in my guy and give me a rocket launcher, and I'll have fun here and do that. And that's what Breath of the Wild kind of was.
Yeah.
Because there wasn't necessarily much of a focus on big dungeons or that kind of progression to it, the classic style of progression. It was more just go around, find shrines, solve the puzzles, find little outposts that the enemies have and destroy that and see what materials and such they have, that kind of stuff.
And best of all, you could basically do it in on pace. I mean, you know, as soon as you were finished with the part, that is, but.
Yeah, I probably did about 100 hours in that game before I even really thought about doing more than the first of the big beast dungeons. Because I was like, now there's so much more else to do here. And you get little side quests and such. That stuff was really fun, especially when you find like the cool little island that they take away all your stuff, and then you have to figure out how to take out the enemies there with what you can find on that island.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of stuff. And Just Cause 2 had that kind of thing too, as well as there's these weird little islands that there's one that was dedicated to the Lost Island. Mm-hmm. So if you were trying to fly a plane over there, it would destroy your plane as you're trying to get there. Mm-hmm. So you'd have to find, you know, another route there that isn't just a mechanical way that it would destroy, because it's based on the Lost Island kind of thing. And that's what this game was. But with Tears of the Kingdom, they seem to be going more in the, I don't know, figure your own fun solutions for this stuff. Cause like the fusing items thing, they also mentioned like, oh, you can just put a bunch of different materials on your bows to add new abilities or elements to them.
Yeah.
And so they put like a bat eye that makes it a seeking arrow. So if you're having trouble, like, you know, aiming with that stuff, you can just be like, all right, I'll just put these eyes on here. I've got a bunch and I'll just take them out for a bit. That kind of stuff, which I'm assuming means they will be pretty easy going on inventory limitation stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Not be as harsh on that stuff, but also hope that means that you will have less of an issue with things like cooking stuff,
mm-hmm.
where you gathered your items for one thing to make and then had to redo it over and over again, mm-hmm. versus like unlocking a recipe that you can like, all right, make 5 of these now that I've done this enough. Stuff to make that easier to manage your inventory. And that seems like a neat thing to figure out, like all the ways of combining stuff to make some cool, tough weapons. And then they also showed off the ability, like if you saw those weird vehicles in the other trailers,
that's what I was about to get to. Yeah,
they have a, I don't know if that's part of the fuse system, but
it is, it's part of the fuse system.
Yeah.
Or if nothing else, it follows the mechanics of the fuse system.
Basically. Yeah. So you get to, I think they show like a lake and it's like, I got to get to the other way and I don't want to swim across.
Yeah. Because swimming up, one of the most cumbersome parts of Breath of the Wild was swimming, let's be honest.
Yeah, because maybe the worst part of it is that you could run out of stamina while swimming.
Yeah.
And that's one of my favorite things about Chia is, like, you only lose stamina if you're going underwater.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's essentially your breath at that point.
Mm-hmm.
But if you get back up to surface level, you get your stamina back kind of thing. And Breath of the Wild definitely wasn't that.
No.
Your first time probably dying was going into this lake area near the where you start. Mm-hmm. It has like a little bit of landmass in the middle of it, but you probably don't have enough stamina to climb up out of the walls.
Mm-hmm.
And you probably fell down and died because you just could not climb out of it.
Yeah.
But this allows you to kind of fuse this. And the way they kind of frame it in this video makes it look like you'll just run into areas where, oh, this is the puzzle section, so there's just random materials here, like logs to build a raft on, and, you know, blower things that you can use to power that that kind of stuff
mm-hmm.
To it. And they create like a weird shape for this raft. So I don't know how much that is important to it, but it seems pretty flexible for how you want to build this stuff.
Yeah, you can basically make like cars and flying machines. And flying is actually going to be a big part of this game because there's a bunch of like sky cities and stuff that sort of appeared in Hyrule. So you're going to have to be using, you know, a lot of flying mechanics.
Yeah. I'm curious sort of how the controls for that stuff will work. Cause it's not like this is a new idea. There's Banjo-Kazooie Nuts and Bolts that kind of had this. That was more of a formal thing where you had to go into like a shop to put this stuff together for specific goals.
It was more like playing like a Lego.
Yeah, like a Kinect build.
Yeah. This here, you're actually like finding stuff out in the wild and having to come up ways to put it all together.
Yeah, I wonder how natural that's going to be, or if it's going to be like, this is an obvious like puzzle thing because there's a bunch of this stuff sitting around.
Yeah, I mean, I'm fine with either way because I mean, fun in its own way. I do kind of hope that it's a bit more open-ended than that because that could really open that game up into just some really amazing ways to just completely break it.
Yeah. And again, make another game where you do not give a shit about having a horse.
Yeah.
Because I never used a horse in Breath of the Wild.
Yeah.
Especially because they did not have Epona in there until I think some of the expansion stuff they put in there.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you can get that. But also you can get a motorcycle because fuck horses.
Mm-hmm.
They'll just die.
Yeah.
And then you're fucked. But yeah, here it's like you can build these weird vehicles, and then it's like, how long are they going to stay in the world? Are you going to have like a blueprint thing you can maybe store them in?
Mm-hmm.
Or you know what? How is that going to work? And obviously, we didn't see any sort of explanation for any of the long term parts of that.
Mm.
Like, are you going to be able to just build this thing and then leave it in this place and come back later, and it will somehow still be there? Will it remember that, or will it just be like, that doesn't exist anymore because you're, you know, 1,000 meters away and you'll have to build it again.
Mm.
I could see that easily being the thing, but what else did they show off here? There's the, I think they call it technically the Ultra Hand is that, that ability to build your vehicles and such.
Mm.
They put up a thing there. Let's see. There's Ascend is the weird new thing. If you, I guess, didn't like the climbing in the game, the weird little game of that where you're climbing up the stamina and trying to.
Mm-hmm.
I liked the climbing because it was like, oh, I'm going to find the a lip here that I can sit on and get my stamina back kind of thing. But now they have this new Ascend ability where you can be like, I don't want to fucking climb anything. Just zoom me up in. I think that completely breaks with like, you know, RPG mechanics where, you know, if you use a flying, a teleport or flying ability in, you know, a Dragon Quest or a Final Fantasy game, old ones, if you're in a dungeon, that doesn't work because you just hit your head on the fucking ceiling.
Yeah. And in this case, they just said,
yeah, just like you just clip through the thing and go all the way to where the top of the structure is.
Yeah. Although I am wondering off of that, because I could absolutely see this being a case where you can accidentally get stuck in something and die on the spot.
Oh, I'm sure it's going to bug out at some point.
Yeah.
For that. So, yeah, that's an interesting ability. I'm curious how they're going to make this stuff all work together. But yeah, because we don't know anything about the structure of the campaign, like what your goal is, besides, you know, obviously defeating Ganon or Ganondorf or whatever his form is at this point. You know, what's going on story-wise, you know, what progression you have here, because obviously there's stamina and that kind of stuff. But, you know, do we have shrines again? We didn't. I'm sure some people have scrubbed through the video to look for any signs of any of that stuff. And it's also like, you're going to be spending a lot of time in the air. How is the world going to look? And is that going to tank the frame rate at all? Because I think they showed there's some like dragons and such flying around. So it's like, how much, like, weird stuff that's going to break the frame rates in this game, like it did in the original or the previous game, Breath of the Wild kind of stuff. But yeah, it makes for some interesting questions that I'm sure they may do another little deep dive showcase here sometime this month before the game comes out May 12th. But yeah, along with that, they also announced that they have themed Switch OLEDs and Pro controllers to go up with this, and I'm sure those have already sold out if you did not pay attention to any of that. Yeah, the themed Pro controller is $75 instead of $70. There's also a Switch carrying case for $25. It looks all right. I'm not too much of a huge fan of it, but I also don't buy any of these extra Switches and whatnot.
Yeah, but I am. So I went ahead and bought everything but the case. I actually have two cases. I have the one that came with the special edition of Breath of the Wild during the Switch launch, and then I have the black and white one that came out when the OLED came out. And while I do prefer the sleek look of the OLED one, it only fits like 4 games in it, whereas the other one had like 16 slots for games. So I was like, okay, I'm going to go back to that one. But yeah, I did not get the case. It's funny, though. It seems like out of everything they're releasing, aside from obviously the collector's edition of the game, it seems like the controller is the rare thing. Like, that one is actually consistently selling out of GameStop and wherever it's posted. Whereas the Switch has actually been, you know, knock on wood, easy to find. It's been popping up everywhere, and yeah. But anyway, I have a bunch of pures everywhere, and I'll definitely be returning things here and there just to make sure that I actually have them.
Yeah. But anything else you have to say about the gameplay and all that? How it looks?
Oh no! Like I'm just looking. I'm really looking forward to it. I am a little bit keen on how the vehicles and stuff work. Like, I know that they showed a demonstration and a lot of people are making comparisons to Banjo-Kazooie Nuts and Bolts, but I've never played that game. So I'm just like wondering how, you know, mandatory it'll be with that sort of thing, especially since, like, if they really want us to focus more on horseback, I don't know how they'd actually do it, because a lot of the fun in Breath of the Wild was just doing things on foot. And the thing about having, you know, Epona around is, you know, she can't climb walls. So we'll see how it goes from there, because, you know, climbing was definitely a huge activity in the game, and you can't really replace it with all these warping and other stuff they're doing. But yeah, I'm just looking forward to seeing how it all works, and I'm sure it'll all meld together, because I remember when I first started playing A Link Between Worlds, and, you know, you're merging with the walls and stuff, like, I thought all that was pretty stupid, but then after I played it, I was like, okay, this is actually pretty awesome, and I get the same vibe with this game.
Yeah. I would say maybe while you got some time until this comes out, like, start up Banjo-Kazooie Nuts and Bolts on Game Pass or whatever. That might be worth checking out to get a little bit of taste of that stuff. But
yeah, that was definitely the plan. I don't plan on like going ahead and finishing it, because I'm playing Star Wars Fallen Order right now, like just to get ready for the next game coming out a couple weeks before Breath of the Wild. So there's that. But yeah, like it seems like if we want a taste of it, Nuts and Bolts would be the way to go.
Yeah, you can play a few hours of that and get the hang of it. The thing I just didn't realize until now is, like, what if you can attach stuff to the horse and turn them into a war machine or something? I'm sure that could be something you could do. Also, just taking the horse onto a vehicle of sorts. If you just have, like, a platform vehicle, just take a horse on there, probably build a place to put the horse in and see what happens if you, like, crash that. Does that kill the horse immediately or... I'm sure people will answer all of these questions as they play it. So,
yeah, I don't know if you guys tried it out, but if you tried a bunch of the amiibo on Breath of the Wild, one of the horses you can unlock was Epona. And like, if you summon it like in front of like one of the guys there, he's like, "Oh, is that the legendary horse Epona?" And the thing is, you can kill your horse. So yeah, killed Epona, and it was a frightful sight.
Yeah. I don't know if I actually did that one, but I would just like do it and then take it to one of the horse places and be like, all right, you're stuck here for the rest of your life. I got more important things to do. But yeah, that's going to be interesting to see how this game goes. I think it's going to be huge, just like Breath of the Wild was, and it's going to do really well for Nintendo and all that. But I'm curious to see how this does and how people take to it, especially the whiny people that complained about the weapons breaking stuff. It was like, this isn't really that big of a deal. I understand you like having, you know, one weapon and never having to worry about it. I guess they also had the Master Sword in it where you had to kind of charge that up. But I never got it, so I don't know what I was missing. But you can also probably get through that game without the Master Sword, because it's a small part of the game. Everything else was just easily doable through much of a bunch of other means, and getting, you know, a bunch of hammers and big great swords and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I definitely want to go and beat that game before this comes out. So maybe I'll do that as a stream here in the next couple of weeks. So yeah, that is, I think, going to do it for the show this week. Thank you to Brandon and Danra for joining. We'll be back next week with a new slate of news and information about things that are coming out in the near future and far future, and anything else that happens in the industry each week. So thank you all for tuning in. If you enjoy the show, if you let friends and family know, they should check it out, and select strangers that may also be excited for Tears of the Kingdom or the Final Fantasy games or Live Alive or whatever. There's a lot of games coming out. There's no reason to be mad about any one game getting delayed, because there's dozens of others coming out in the near future that can be the thing you can obsess about until the other things come out. So yeah, thank you all for tuning in. We hope to see you again next time. Have a good holiday, and we'll see you all next time. Have a good one.